We are in the last chapter in the book of Leviticus. It's not a very complicated chapter. Not much that to go through, so probably won't be an awful lot of discussion on it all by itself, except maybe you have some questions you might want to have.
Leviticus 27. The Lord spoke to Moshe, saying, "Speak to the people of Israel and say to them, if anyone makes a special vow to the Lord involving valuation of persons, then the valuation of a male from 20 years old up to 60 years shall be 50 shekels of silver, according to the shekel of the sanctuary. If the person is female, the valuation shall be 30 shekels. If the person is from 5 years old up to 20 years old, the valuation shall be for a male 20 shekels and for a female 10 shekels. If the person is from a month old up to 5 years old, the valuation shall be for a male 5 shekels of silver, and for a female, the valuation shall be 3 shekels of silver. And if the person is 60 years old or over, then the valuation for a male shall be 15 shekels, and for a female, 10 shekels. And if someone is too poor to pay the valuation, then he shall be made to stand before the priest, and the priest shall value him. The priest shall value him according to what the vower can afford. If the vow is an animal that may be offered as an offering to the Lord, all of it that he gives goes to the Lord as holy. He shall not exchange it or make a substitute for it, good for bad, or bad for good. And if he does in fact substitute one animal for another, then both it and the substitute shall be holy. And if it is any unclean animal that may not be offered as an offering to the Lord, then he shall stand the animal before the priest, and the priest shall value it as either good or bad. As the priest values it, so it shall be. But if he wishes to redeem it, he shall add a fifth to its valuation. When a man declares his house as a holy gift to the Lord, the priest shall value it as either good or bad, and as the priest values it, so it shall stand. And if the donor wishes to redeem his house, he shall add a fifth to the valuation price, and it shall be his. If a man dedicates to the Lord part of the land that is his possession, then the valuation shall be in proportion to its seed. An omer of barley seed shall be valued at 50 shekels of silver. If he dedicates his field from the year of Jubilee, then the valuation shall stand. But if he dedicates his field after the Jubilee, then the priest shall calculate the price according to the years that remain until the year of Jubilee. Then a deduction shall be made from the valuation. And if he who dedicates the field wishes to redeem it, then he shall pay, add a fifth to its valuation price, and it shall remain his. But if he does not wish to redeem the field, or if he has sold the field to another man, it shall not be redeemed anymore. But the field, when it is released in the Jubilee, shall be a holy gift to the Lord, like a field that has been devoted. And the priest shall be in possession of it. If he dedicates to the Lord a field that he has bought, which is not part of his possession, then the priest shall calculate the amount of the valuation for it up to the year of Jubilee. Then the man shall give the valuation on that day as a holy gift to the Lord. In the year of Jubilee, the field shall return to him from whom it was bought, to whom the land belongs as a possession. Every valuation shall be according to the shekel of the sanctuary. 20 gerahs shall make a shekel. But a firstborn of animals, which is a firstborn, belongs to the Lord. No man may dedicate, whether ox or sheep, it is the Lord's. And if it is an unclean animal, then he shall buy it back at the valuation and add a fifth to it. Or if it is not redeemed, it shall be sold at the valuation. But no devoted thing that a man devotes to the Lord of anything that he has, whether man or beast, or of his inherited field, shall be sold or redeemed. Every devoted thing is most holy to the Lord. No one devoted who is to be devoted to destruction from mankind shall be ransomed. He shall surely be put to death. Every tithe of the land, whether of the seed of the land or the fruit of the trees, is the Lord's. It is holy to the Lord. If a man wishes to redeem some of his tithe, he shall add a fifth to it. And every tithe of herds, every tenth animal of all that pass under the herdman's staff, shall be holy to the Lord. One shall not differentiate between good or bad. Neither shall he make a substitute for it. And if he does not substitute it, then both it and the substitute shall be holy. It shall not be redeemed. These are the commandments that the Lord commanded Moshe for the people of Israel on Mount Sinai.
Okay, yes.
All right. What does this mean, evaluating things, animals, people, the boys, the children, and all the way up? What is that? And then when you don't give something to Elohim, is that just the when they give the land or a house, how is that given to him? And what is, I don't know what that means. Do they grow food on that land and they give it to the high priest? Because it really, to me, doesn't seem to be very specific. And another thing that, I read this before so I could be on top of you, and something caught my attention, but Yahusha was bought with 30 shekels of silver, the amount that somebody would pay for a woman. Does that mean anything? That's what, when I was just about to go to sleep, I realized that. And I thought, I better ask Richard about that.
Okay. Any other comments before we start? An unusual chapter? Basically, it talks about the very first statement. Let's go right there to verse 2. And he says now that when a man shall make a singular vow. Now, what that phrase means, okay, he's going to be giving something of value, basically. And it's not a vow like we think of the vow of life and death or this or that. Basically, that word can and does very often, in this particular chapter, means to do something extraordinary. Do something different than you would normally not require to do, but you just do it. And you want to dedicate that to Yahweh. It's not that anything takes place. Now, he puts on this thing, he puts down there what's called a promise. You're going to do this, and you'll fulfill the promise that you're going to have, that you're going to be doing to God, in a sense. You might call it a promise, but it's more like you're going to devote something to God. This is what this chapter really is all about. You're going to give something and devote something to God that belongs to you. And then you have options and how he wants it to be done, what he considers, what God considers, not what people consider, of what is the value of it. And so God sets a value on human beings, though it may seem strange to us, but everything has to have a direction and a valuation. Something has to be of certain significant value. How would you consider the value of a person? Is it for slavery? No. Let's not talk about slavery. What's it talking about?
Redeeming.
The person is going... No, not redemption here. Redemption can come later. He can buy himself back later. It's for a purpose that he wants to do something himself or herself for God. Now, the value is based upon when you put a value upon someone's worth. God's looking at all men at the same value up to a certain age. He looked at all women at a certain value up to a certain age. And if they're older than that, the value goes down. The value of me is less than the value of anybody under the age of 60. So we have this question. Now, why would God want this to be done? He's talking about, he goes to the point of an animal, right? Who makes a decision if it's a clean animal? Who has it? That's holy unto God, period, point blank. For sacrifices, that is. You're going to give something different, give something extra, something special. Above and beyond, shall we say, what you normally would be doing or required to do. The last part of this chapter is telling people, you could do more if you want. You could dedicate more if you want. You could do this if you want. And by the way, if it gets hard for you, you can buy certain things back. You know, which now you, if it's $30 for a man, but he can't fulfill his deal, but he has to buy himself back, he has to pay 20, 15% more on top of that. So he would no longer be required to continue on. It's not like an oath. And per se, it's more like a vow that, or what said he wants to do is, and they try to do this. God does not really, he's not angry in this book at all, in this chapter at all, when people do these things. And so what is the value? If you do something, there is a certain amount of money you give to the priesthood for the services you're going to do. You don't get money for working for the priesthood. It's the other way around. If you're working for the priesthood, you give money, and that's, in this case, a min is 40. And for a woman, it's 15 or whatever it was. I can't remember what it was right off the top of my head. And it's the time that you are going to do something extraordinary that's different than you've ever done before, different than what's required. There's God opens up the door for you to serve the temple, or in this case, tabernacle, or serve the priesthood at any time. And you're in your land, you've got your own land, you may have some property, and you want to be able to dedicate that property for a certain period of time, not for eternity, certain period of time, and you dedicate it to whatever grows on that piece of property will belong to the priesthood. All right? And that's what basically boils down to. And if you want to get back that piece of property, or that based upon the value of the seed, what is the value of barley? He told us exactly the value of barley is. So we're looking at a price of barley, and he says, this much for Omar, period. And if you buy back that barley, guess what? You have to pay more back, okay? 20% more, basically. And so, you know, it's not that, it's not that you cannot do this. Oh, what was that? Oh, well. I heard a sound. Okay. Airy sound in my ears. Now, also talks about, it says, you know, a person at all times and in all places, they could present something of an offering to God. You could offer something to God at any time you want to offer it to God. You're not having to wait for a certain date, certain time, or a certain event. Now, all the other ones, like all the holidays, those are certain appointed events, certain appointed times, no certain requirement that you must come up with. But when it's not there, you could do extra, you know, whatever you want to do. Yes?
So is this similar to Thanksgiving
offer? Not quite. Thanksgiving offering is a system by certain things have to be given on that Thanksgiving offering. That's different. This is giving something separate. Yeah. That is a Thanksgiving offering here. Here is something of value God's looking at now. If you're going to offer yourself to God, this is the value. Okay? You're not worth more than somebody else.
So when Samuel was dedicated to the priesthood,
yeah.
That's similar to this.
Right. That's one of the examples they bring up about Samuel. Because he was one that was dedicated before he was born to be that. And so he became that and was that for the rest of his life. It's very interesting there about Samuel and how that transpires. But everything has to be done in a precise way, in precise order. It's not in chaos and confusion of on the spur of the moment, you just don't do it. You start thinking about what you're going to do before you do it. Basically, this chapter is not that hard to figure out in a lot of ways. Now, there's different issues about, you know, if you're older, there's not that much you could do for the priesthood. And you might be in their way. Then really working for them or helping them out or doing something of production for them or doing something that is profitable for them, you may be in the way. And so he doesn't bar you out. You can still do that if you're an old man or an old woman, you go ahead and continue on doing, and this is the value you will pay to the priesthood in order that you can work with them and for them. Because basically the priesthood has a limited amount of money. They have a limited amount of money, period. What do they have abundance of? Now, if you have, I'm sorry, what?
Barbecue.
Now, wait a minute. When it comes to the holy days, everybody gets it. Don't get confused. There's only two exceptions to the whole rule, and that's the sin offering or the guilt offering. That does then therefore belong. And a shalom offering belongs to. But we're not going to go there today. Those are required things of a certain kind of offering that you're going to give. Here you're doing it for a evaluation. What are you worth? Why would he say only, the men of male 20 and older up to 60, that they are only worth 50 shekels? How come some couldn't be worth 100? How come some couldn't be worth 3 million? Daniel.
It is not God's practice to value one person over another person.
That's as simple
as
it is.
It's not how he does things.
You cannot elevate yourself up. If you're a very rich man, you can't elevate yourself up by giving a whole lot more. It doesn't work. This is the amount, period, point blank. And so no one can take credit. I can use that terminology. For the priest having something of eight, they can't take a bribe after that because it's all, everybody has to pay the same thing, right? So that's all they get. And the priest, he can't make the guy pay more.
We're all equal.
Yes. There's no one can be elevated. The priesthood could not elevate somebody more important above others. God set the value of people. He set the value of an unclean animal. He set the value of a clean animal. He set the value so no one can actually take advantage. Even when a man is poor, guess what? The priest makes the decision of what he's worth. He'll be less than normal, of course. But whatever it is, if he wants to dedicate something, do something, give something special to God, but he's poor, he can still give him something, but based upon his value. In other words, the priest then will make a decision of the value, which is probably a whole lot less. We say, what's this all about? What is this all about? Why does he give a stipulation of redemption?
Is it in case something's going wrong in your life and you need to take it back?
Or, didn't say even if it did went wrong, if you want it back, you're going to pay this much more money back for it. So you're going to pay the 30 shekels or 40 shekels plus 20% more on top of all that. Give it back. And then you're free from the quote, vow, end of quote, that you gave. Whether you gave vow of yourself, a time of yourself to work someplace, or maybe the piece of land for a while, your house. People in the past have said they dedicated their house to God. Well, then it's a really bad message because the Word of God says, yes, you can do that. However, the value of the house will depend upon what the priest says it is, not what you say it is. And if you want the house back, you got to pay whatever the priest says is valued plus another 20%. Pretty heavy price, don't you think? So if you look at the value of your house right now, and say, okay, I want to dedicate to God, so you give it to God, and all of a sudden, you want it back. Well, let's say your house is worth $300,000. You want it back? Guess what? Inflation, you might say, real quick, happened to you real fast. You brought it upon yourself. But he lets the person to redeem and to buy back. You don't have to have it. And the tithe of the herd, the tithe of the flock, and whatsoever passes under the rod, remember, it has to be the 10th animal. Not the first one, or the second one, or the third one, or the fourth one. Can't not even be the 11th one. It has to be the 10th one. If you only have 9, guess what? You don't give it. God wasn't out to get as much as he can get. When it came to animals, he knows the value of the animals for the person is highly more important, and animals don't reproduce like a wild animal does. They don't reproduce like, a rabbit does. And a flock after flock after flock, or even like a cats have a lot of them, or dogs have lots of puppies in a year. But, we talk about cattle, herds, that which you are, the clean animal, that's what you go under. The tithe, by the way, tithe only on the clean animal. It's not a tithe on anything else. Just the clean animal. And some people think they have to pay a tithe on everything. And the Word of God names what to be tithed. And the animals to be tithed. Barley is to be tithed. Wheat is to be tithed. What else gets tithed? And we've gone through the book of Leviticus. What else gets tithed besides those three items? Sheep? Well, that's an animal. Huh? No. The house does not get tithed. What does God take of the tree? That was the question. But he gets the fifth year, he gets it all. The sixth year, it's all yours. From that point on, he only requires it once from a tree that you planted. Yes. You understand what I'm saying? That's what it said.
Get 1 through 5.
No. First, 1, 2, 3 years goes, 4 years goes back in the ground.
Yeah.
No one picks it, goes back in the ground. You give nourishment back to the ground.
Okay.
And the fifth year, it belongs to God. The sixth year, and thereon, it belongs to the people. Now, if you happen to buy a house, you happen to have a tree in the backyard producing fruit, been there for 20 years, you don't have to worry about it. Because the fifth year was the only one he requires it. I'm sorry, what? No repetition at all. Nope. The only thing that repeats itself is the land. That is the vineyard and the grain. Every 7 years, let it be idle. Let it go. Don't do anything with it. And then the Jubilee year, it's the whole year plus that last seventh year, and then it's got 2 years solid, nothing happens in the year of Jubilee. You're not even supposed to even do anything with the Jubilee year, with the land. Yes.
So this Shabbat is our new year.
I'm totally out of context. Sorry,
but is that right?
It's this coming.
So does
coming
that mean our
moon?
Shemitah is over?
No. Oh, no! It's the three seasons. I had to kind of picture it in that picture. It's not a yearly thing. It's a seasonal thing. There are three seasons in a year. So we talk about this particular from the time. Okay. From the time of, from one season to the next season. Let's see, here's the first season, there's the second season, which is, piece of weeks. There's crop being produced. And that's a tithe of the wheat. That you give. Now, you don't have anything to give beyond that point. Now, something from the feast of 7 weeks to the fall feast, a lot of crops coming up. A lot of things come up. Then you have a tithe on that one. Right? You don't wait for a year. That's it. You take the feast, you do what you're supposed to do with it, and that's it. Goodbye. And then from the fall feast back into the spring feast, there's other things you're going to be producing, and including barley. You come to that, guess what happens? That's when you offer God. Then you have a tithe of the barley. Now, an animal, it can happen anytime, of course. All right, but we're talking about the tithe in relationship to being repeated. It's from one season to the next season to the next season. This is the reason why there's a longer season from Shavuot to Feast Tabernacles, is because it's a much bigger feast. And you have a lot more things, a lot more animals, a lot more everything, because you're talking summertime. And things start, popping up like crazy in summertime, in the fall time. Things are being reproduced and increasing the crop rapidly during that time from summer to fall. But it's that time between summer and fall, that's the tithe year, or that's the third tithe in that particular year, in a sense. The first tithe basically is from, if I can use those words, is from the Feast of Shavuot to Days of Unleavened Bread. And then the second quote tithe is from Days of Unleavened Bread to the wheat harvest. The third tithe of the year then is from the wheat to the fall. It's not a yearly thing in the sense that you do this because you stack it up on Gentile time or the sacred time or anything. No, it's season to season to season. That's how God works. He doesn't work on any other time cycle except those seasons. Does that explain it a little bit? So we have this interesting tale here on the 7th chapter, 27th chapter, about what to devote and what not to devote. What is it you cannot devote? You can devote your land. You can devote your house. Can you devote your daughter? The man has to do that one. Do this. You know, when a baby is offered, someone has to come through. And who basically offers the baby up? It's always the mother. But it's only for a short period of time. It's not for eternity, yes. And they'd be redeemed back.
So did Hannah, when she dedicated her son, who became was he the high priest?
Yeah.
Okay. But she gave him when he was, after she weaned him. Did she get to take him back home?
No, she asked that before.
Okay, so she never got him back then,
right?
But
Daniel brought out, this is on loan. Loan for 50 years. That was the time he was going to loan her son to God for 50 years. And guess what happened when the 50th year took place? He was dead. About that time. Right, but he had to hand him over to Levi when he was 2 years old. That's when the actual handover took place. I would think that's very unusual. I'm not saying one way or the other. I imagine, because according to law, she would have had to pay the Levi money for her to take Samuel, according to what it says here, right? And he wouldn't even, he's only 2 years old, so what was the price of a baby? Up to 5 years old, was something like that? 5 year old to 20 is one thing. Oh, it's a month old to 5 years old, then it's going to be, if in this case it was 5 shekels of silver. Yes.
It doesn't make sense to me that people have to pay to serve. That it seems to me that the money is going the other direction. Because it says only the firstlings of the beast, which should be the Lord's firstling already.
Right.
No man shall sanctify it. Why would somebody even want to sanctify their firstling if they weren't going to get money for it?
Why?
Yeah.
I don't have an answer for you.
They already have to give it to him without getting money.
Moses had to sanctify
so
the firstborn out of Egypt. I imagine there had to be a price be paid for him. And they belong to God.
Right, but since they're the firstling, they already don't have to pay any money. It's already his. So why would they even think to do that? Why does he have to make that requirement?
Okay, then we're not talking about the firstling, are we? We're talking about somebody else.
Right.
We're talking about another baby. It's not the firstborn.
Right, but that's why the direction of money doesn't make sense to me, though. It's because he put that in there. Like, if I had, I had a cow and she had her first calf. That's automatically God's, right? There's no
right.
money exchange. There's nothing. He already said that. So that's already his. Why would I even want to use that calf as a service animal like that? Why would I even have the thought in my head if I already knew I couldn't? If I knew I had to pay money for it, why would I even want to do that?
Oh, sir, what'd you say? You said something?
Yeah, it doesn't cost you anything because the firstborn is already his. So,
but the second one is not.
To try to vow it, I think probably the best way to sum up this chapter is in the parable that Yeshua talked about, counting the cost before you build a tower. That is really what's behind this, because, you know, you are basically putting forward a value and going into a vow. So it's really a lot into the sense of counting the cost before you go forward into your role, because that's why when Yeshua says, you know, it's best that you don't make a vow at all. Just let your yes be yes and your no be no, because if you're going to do something for the Lord, just go and dedicate yourself forward to go do it.
Yeah, in the very first part of this book, the chapter, he's not talking about an ordinary offering. He's talking about something that's extraordinary, something beyond what God has already required. So it's a little bit different. This is not something that you have to do, something that you are wanting to do for a reason, for a purpose. Why would you want to do that? Let's say you do have too many sheep and too many cattle, and you want to get rid of it. What are you going to do with it? Sell it? Of course, make money. But what if you want to dedicate it? What if you want to give it to somebody? Who do you give it to? The priesthood. Why would the priest get money in exchange? Priests don't, they don't buy and sell. They don't go on the market with the goods and bring the market. By the way, I have some apples here. Sell. No. He doesn't do that. He doesn't get a possession. He didn't own anything. He's not supposed to own anything. Only God owns it all. And so now you come in the financial thing of it and how to do according to the weight of the shackle of the tabernacle, not according to anybody else's weight. And that was always reevaluated every 7 years to make sure it turned back to its original value. But this is extraordinary. It's like going out of the norm that you are going to be doing.
I'm confused about how Carrie was talking about the first cow. When your animal has it belongs to the Lord, so you don't do anything with it. You just feed it and let it live around everything, but you don't use it for anything?
Uh-huh.
Is that what that means?
The first one that comes from the womb belongs to God, yes.
So you don't do anything with it, you just let it live on your land and not...
Well, it has to be of a certain age before you give it to the priesthood. It had to be, you know, it's got to come off its mother's milk before you give it to...
Okay. And then you give it to...
You don't give it to them, because... No, this, okay, the priest, your job now.
Okay, I get that now. Okay, now, do the priesthood help the poor? If there are poor people around?
No, it's required of the people of Israel to help the poor.
Okay, then what is happening with all this money going to the priesthood if they can't own anything or do anything with it? It seems like they're going to have all this money, they're not going to know what to do with it.
The priesthood has families and such.
Yeah.
And
sometimes they need to buy stuff.
They need to
buy some clothing. They need to buy something for their house. Maybe they have to go buy some more extra wheat. Maybe they have to buy some more food. You know, we don't know. I mean, they're like anybody else who has to have the belongings. And plus, sometimes you like to have something extra in your house.
Sure.
Yeah. So they probably will buy the wonderful things, the beautiful things that they would like to have. And it's their money. They get to do what they want to do with it. And God let them have it. But he doesn't let them have an overwhelming amount. When you do something extraordinary, go out of your way to do something extra with God, other than what you're required by what we've already read through the Torah, now you can't, priesthood, you can't charge more than 40 pieces of silver for a guy. No more. You can't charge him a value greater than 40. You can't charge the woman greater than, was it 30, something like that. It keeps the priesthood from becoming the most wealthiest people in all of Israel. But they have to have money, like everybody else has to have money, in order to transport of goods, cattle. If they're going to go for a trip, they have to go someplace. It costs money to go someplace. It costs money to travel. It costs money to take their family. It costs money to do this and money to do that. I don't think they were... quote, poor, they probably what we may call middle class. That's what they call them. But remember, they also had to do continual services. Now, when a priesthood had to go out from his area and go someplace else to do functions, guess what? He's got to pay his way getting there and pay his way back. He's already got the money. The money is there. He's got even the unclean animals. He needs a horse. Guess what? Someone donated a horse. Yeah, a car. This is go above and beyond the normal. This chapter is not that hard to really figure out. Maybe it is, but we've tried to put value of why is there a value to the thing? Because God set the value so somebody can't get super rich. Can't make an awful lot of money. And it's not commanded that every male does that. Every female does that. No, only if you're going to do something above the normal. So we can say in our mind, we can say, well, if they made a law that they had to, every man had to pay 40 shekels first when he was a baby, he had to pay this much, and he was 5 years old, got to pay this much, and then he's 20 to 40, he has to pay this much, and after 60, he pays that much. No, it's at the point of this. They were still at where? Where were they? Yeah, Mount Sinai. And these are telling them what to do. Now you get your own land, guess what? Now you have to run it according to how I want it to be run. And the other chapters, we talked about that. In 7 years, you give it a day of rest, or your year of rest. But they weren't there yet. We're still here in the book of Leviticus, and they have not left. Not even been there for 1 year yet. Now they're building the tabernacle. They're doing all that kind of stuff. And the tabernacle is not erected until, and sometime in Deuteronomy, I think like the 3rd or 4th, 5th chapter, finally got erected. It was a year later, and it was erected. And Moses had to do something very special when that took place. But we won't go there. Okay? Yes?
Let's say I came with a large sum of money and I wanted to go out and buy some land and start doing these things. If I wanted to plant some trees, and do I start my 7 years then, or do I wait till it come around on the calendar?
Scripturally speaking, doesn't say. So it just says that when you have your land, your piece of land, guess what? That's when your 7 year cycle begins. That's my personal thinking. I can't picture it for every citizen of Israel when they walked into the promised land, that all of them all of a sudden had to do it all at once. They didn't get possession for several years later, during the book of Joshua. It took them a long time to get that property and control that property so they could stake claim on it and say, this land now belongs to this tribe. This land now belongs to this tribe. They never succeeded, wiped them all out. They still had a problem, even during the time of the judges. They're still fighting the people and getting them out. So once they were moved, we can't be under a suspicion or a thinking process that they were always moved on the Day of Atonement. Well, no, that doesn't say that. We don't know when. And so when we start laying a 7 year cycle on what we do and how what we own and what we do, that's a little bit different than the nation of Israel, which is called the Jubilee year. That's entirely different. That's for the entire nation. And you know, now I said, now that is 50 years later. That's a long cycle. And once that cycle begins, guess what? Everybody gets into that cycle. When you first walk into the land, you don't have, how could you possibly give a tithe of your wheat when you don't have any wheat? There's nothing there. You haven't planted anything yet. Nothing's come up because you have no seed or couldn't plant the seed. You're fighting the guys who have the land, and you're fighting them and conquering them and cleaning up the mess, cleaning up the dead body and all that kind of stuff. It takes a while to do that. It's not like it was overnight and all of a sudden Israel was the most powerful country within a year after they walked in. And how many years later did they finally become very powerful? They became very powerful under David and then under King Solomon. That's when they became very powerful, very wealthy. So we're looking at a series here of what to do when you want to do something special. You want to do something different than what just was required by law, or is required by what is a sacrifice or something to devote something. Because here it's not a sacrifice, it's something you're going to devote to. So that's why you can devote your house, you can devote your land, you can devote yourself. You don't kill yourself as a sacrifice, no, you devote yourself to do something for God. Yes?
Oh, just going to ask, would an example of sanctifying or devoting an unclean animal, it could be, like today we might call it donating, but it would be, you know, if I had an extra donkey and I knew that the priests needed some donkeys for taking trips, then I could, what we call today, donate one of my donkeys.
Right.
So that they had the use of it.
And the priest makes the decision of its value. Whatever he thinks that value is of that animal, then that's the said value. It doesn't change. It's like, put it this way, when we call it today a broker, he sets the price. That's it. No negotiation beyond that point.
Oh, he sets the value in case the other person wants to buy it back?
Yeah. It's the only reason why you do that, just in case the person wants to buy the thing back. So you set a value to it in case the person wants to buy it back. Suppose your other donkey died and you needed it back. Yes.
So if you think about then these valuations in the earlier part of the chapter where it talks about the value of a young man versus an old man, young woman versus an old woman, the woman values are lower because they would be not be able to afford the higher ones because women did not really work in those days. So if you said, all human beings between 20 and 60 are 50
yeah.
shekels or whatever, a man could probably figure a way to pay that and the 20%, but a woman probably couldn't pay
yeah.
that plus the 20%. It would be above what she could bear.
Yeah, yeah.
So by setting the value of a young woman between the ages of 20 and 60 at a value of 30 rather than 50, then that would be something that she could more easily bear to pay. And then
if she wants to do something
if
extra,
she wanted to do something,
something
yeah.
special for God, yeah. It's not a sin if you don't do something special for God, by the way. It's not, you don't feel guilty because you don't do it and everybody else does it. That's not the object of this thing. It's when someone does this. Okay? When a man or somebody makes a certain vow. Yes?
There's one line in here, verse 29. It absolutely makes no sense to me. Maybe I don't understand the context.
Okay. About the field?
No person under the ban who may become doomed to destruction among men shall be redeemed, but shall surely be put to death. What are they talking about there?
Okay. Notwithstanding, no devote thing that a man shall devote unto Yahweh of all that he has, both of man and beast, and of the field that he possesses, shall be sold. Are redeemed. Every devout thing shall be most holy unto God. None of the devoted things which shall be devoted to man shall be redeemed, but it shall surely be put to death. This is not referring to the man, it's probably referring to the animals, I would assume. Because you don't put the man to death. More than likely it's that beast. And in the field of his possession and so on and so forth. He should be sold or redeemed. Every devout thing is most holy. If there's something that's most holy unto God and you've devoted it to be most holy unto God, that you cannot buy back. Not everything is devoted here in this chapter is holy unto God. Only the clean animal is holy unto God. The unclean animal belongs to the priesthood. And you can buy back the unclean animal. But that which is holy unto God You cannot buy it back. Now, how do you make a land holy unto God? Now, you cannot buy it back. How can you kill the land? You don't. So have you talked about something that is devoted to, that was holy unto God? And I have to make my point here. I don't completely understand that part, other than maybe it's not translated correctly in English, because it doesn't make sense to say the man gets killed. But it doesn't. There's no death sentence in this thing at all that I can see, except that one statement about something that he devoted. Whatever somebody devotes, it shall be redeemed, but shall surely be put to death. None devoted which he has devoted of men shall be redeemed. Now, what is it that men devote? In this previous verse, it's really talking about no devoted thing that a man shall devote unto Yahweh of all of the he has denoted of men and beast, field, position, shall be sold or redeemed, shall not be sold or redeemed. So it becomes the proportions of how the man does it, how you say this thing, I do not know. The other part of the chapters, you can redeem it. If it's to the priesthood, you get to redeem it. But to God, you don't get to redeem it. I would, if it's been sold, or if it got redeemed, execution on the animal. All right, a little confusing, I grant you. It's not everything that makes clear. And the 25th, 27th chapter is probably the more difficult one to go through, because we don't understand how God puts value on things and what is important to God. When a piece of property, like say where the temple was built, if that was given to God to build his temple on it, then that mountain belongs to whom? It belongs to God. Okay? Now, you're going to have a piece of land that you're going to devote to God in order that the priest would always have something to eat. But you're devoting it to God that it become holy, sanctified, set aside. Okay, remember, holy is something you do, not something that is. Remember that? So when you do something and it's to be holy, and your action is a holy thing, you're doing something of giving it to the God, that's an action you're doing. You're doing something for God. If you're doing it for the priesthood, then you're doing something for the priesthood. If you're doing it for a neighbor, you're doing it for a neighbor. You're doing it for a stranger, doing it for a stranger. All right? And so we look at this point, we say, okay, what is it that God has in mind? I'd have to say, by looking at what it says, that it has to do with if that land was devoted to God, then it becomes God. If it was not devoted to God, then you can redeem it back. If you did not devote it to God, but you devoted it to the priesthood, okay? The priesthood's homes were not holy lands. They were not holy places. They were just where the priests lived. There was, what, seven cities, something like that? And they were there for only one basic reason, and that is to teach the people what God had taught them in Mount Sinai. Their job was to continue teaching, continue teaching, continue teaching. Yes.
So the land to grow the food to give to the priests, right? Because they were counting the land by the seed and what was on it.
On the seed. Now they had the value of the seed.
Okay.
The produce.
So they were... When they devote, it wasn't necessarily they were giving the land. It was they were growing the...
Well, it says according to the seed.
Okay.
The weight of the seed.
I just caught that a second ago.
Yeah. That's a little bit different. That's why you can actually give something to the priesthood that comes from your land. You can devote something from the priesthood of the land that you have. Yes.
So does God devote land like he did from the River Nile to the Euphrates River, Jerusalem, all that, isn't that what he devoted?
I don't quite get that one. He destroyed all of Egypt.
Huh?
He destroyed all of Egypt.
I know, but he said the land that he was giving to the children of Israel went from the Nile all the way to the Euphrates River.
Oh!
Isn't that what he devoted?
to the children of Israel?
No, that's a different word. Don't get Nile in relationship to the word the river of Egypt. There is a wadi, or river, that's called the river of Egypt. It's the southern section of Israel. That's called the river of Egypt. That's where that land is, not the Nile, but that land, which is a lot farther away from the Sinai Peninsula. It's quite a ways north. All the way to a certain section of the Tigris River. Not all the way down, but to where Abraham was, in that area. So where Abraham lived, and actually according to prophecy, they actually did possess that land at one time in their history. Well, yeah, but that doesn't mean people hang on to the things that come on. Or, what did God say to them? I will spew you out. Well, it's his land, right? He can spew it out. If you don't do it right, out you go. Right? Something can be devoted and then become corrupted.